You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Kedar Brock. Kedar, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Really excited to talk with you.
Kedar, let's talk about what you're working on right now. And you're in Brooklyn at the moment. Is that where you're talking to me from?
Yeah, I'm sweating it out in my studio in Williamsburg. I got the AC cranked up as much as it can go, but it's still a little swampy here. It's like, it's warm.
Well, this is supposed to be kind of record-breaking heat day, too. So, hang in
Not
there.
Surprising.
Okay, so what are you working on now? Yeah, what's happening in your studio, or what are you getting ready for? What's going on right now?
Well, I'm working on some paintings as usual. Scraping them, sanding them, beating them up. I'm also just starting a totally new series of work that nobody will have seen yet and probably won't see for, I don't know, 6 months to a year. That is just straight-up painting, all dealing with some things that I've been researching over the last couple of years. I'm preparing for an exhibition in New York City in November. The gallery that I work with in Chicago, Patron Gallery, has been doing this series of essentially pop-up projects in New York where they rent a space on the Lower East Side for a week and show some of their gallery artists. So they're doing one of those for me second week in November. So I'm just trying to make sure I have enough work to be able to choose a selection of paintings that I feel happy with and where I can potentially introduce some new things that I've been working on and thinking about in the context of some kind of more recognizable things and trying to just, get to that critical mass, I guess you could say.
All right, so let's talk about your painting. So that's good. We can maybe talk a little about what's coming up in November, but also let's talk about what you were talking about, beating up, scraping down, working on the paintings. Your work is pretty large, right? The work from this year that I've seen on your website is like 4x5 or 4x6 feet, right?
Yeah, they're all basically like body size or slightly bigger, if that makes sense. Like, I've always been interested in like the painting corresponding to my and hopefully majority of viewers, as I'm like pretty average sized individual. I'm not particularly tall, I'm not particularly short, kind of don't weigh a lot, don't weigh a little, I like to think of the size of the paintings as kind of corresponding to the body as something that someone could both like walk into and maybe put their arms around or close, stretch their arms out and kind of get to the borders of, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Does that also have to, I often think, paintings that size have to do with actually physical gestures, the way a lot of the abstract expressionist paintings were so large, while they weren't all about gestures, it struck me that they're, kind of like the width of your arms, they can carry that kind of movement. Yours don't necessarily have, I think, that specificity to it, of that kind of big, wide movement, but is that part of it also, that you're making kind of
100%.
Gestures in these?
Yeah. That's a really like a really astute observation and point of content that I'm really interested in. Like, I feel, specifically in the works, that are so sanded, scraped, and kind of beaten down on, so to speak, I see them as directly investigating and challenging gesture en masse, or what we think of as a conventional painting gesture. And for me, that comes directly out of this kind of history that you're talking about with abstract expressionism and the kind of scale of the body to the brush to the canvas. They are, the gestures that I end up making are these kind of like alternative records, They're kind of recordings of these other physical actions that don't fit into this kind of more direct relationship to what people think of as painting or what people think of as, gestural and expressionistic painting, but they are still these very physical actions that I'm taking. It's just that the tools happen to be, an orbital sander or a window scraper.
So let's talk about those actions and eventually get into the content of that. The actions are that you're, how do you begin to move through a painting? Is it a process that's planned? And it also sounds like there's a lot of layers happening. There's build up and scraping down, or how does it work?
Yeah, there's plenty of layers that go into the paintings. they do actually begin as kind of more conventional paintings where I do make the types of gestures that I'm talking about questioning. So they're not always abstract, though oftentimes, and definitely in the past, they started as just kind of, for lack of a better term, kind of generic abstract paintings. But over the last 2 years, those initial layers, or underpaintings as I call them, have begun to take on a kind of certain character, and like have been the result of like different bits of research and investigations that I've been doing. Lately, they've been really focusing on content that relates to New Age religion, and specifically to a New Age church that both of my parents are involved in. All that being said, that initial painting is then, you know, left to dry. I sit around with them in my studio. I have, you know, 30, 40 paintings going at once. Usually they end up stacked up because I need to wait for this initial painting to dry. And I'll take them off the stretcher bars. I'll throw them on the big wooden table that I have, and I'll sit there with a, you know, a little 2-inch, 2.5-inch window scraper and just scrape away at the painting with a razor blade. As I'm doing that scraping, oftentimes the canvas gets abraded and, you know, punctured, after which, depending on, you know, which kind of mode I'm working in, I will usually either hit that with a bin primer, which is, you know, like an industrial strength sealer primer. Then after that dries, I'll take it out, sand it down, and then repeat that process. So I'll go and make another painting that will correspond content-wise or concept-wise to the painting that I had previously made that has been now obfuscated and kind of distressed. Let that dry, go ahead and scrape it, prime it, sand it, and then kind of repeat. Within that framework, though, over the last probably 2 years, I've begun investigating various ways that I could kind of insert other gestures, if that makes sense. So, you know, choosing what type of surface I sand on, choosing whether or not I put other materials underneath the canvas as I'm sanding on it, choosing to physically fall into the canvas while it's wet with the bin primer to make an impression that then, you know, will come out as like a ghost of an image in the final kind of, you know, final kind of imagery that, you know, or not imagery, but final kind of look of the painting, you know, throwing things onto it while sweat, doing all these kind of other things, finding these other spaces where I can insert myself.
So let's talk more about the content of it. You know, there's content in there that I didn't pick up when looking at it, but you talked about a New Age religion that your parents were involved in, and then other things. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Because I see outlines of some things in there. Some, of course,
sure,
look like there isn't any images in it, but then others look almost like constellations or the graphics that accompany constellations. So what are the images in it? Because they seem, and I assume that's intentional, the imagery that's in there and this content seems like the viewer really has to dig for that or figure it out.
Yeah, that's 100% accurate. Like, most of the time there is only the vaguest, in a lot of the work that people are familiar with, there's only the vaguest kind of hint of different imagery that people can pick up on and then do sleuthing through the title or, you know, or asking me about other images, having that kind of interaction with it. But again, it's kind of like, how do I break this down simply? In a certain way, it's much more about this kind of ritual, right? This performative and almost magical kind of series of actions that I take. So the original image, while relating to content that I'm, you know, incredibly interested in, also functions as kind of like a symbolic entity that I'm then performing this other kind of action with. And then not only does that function as, you know, this kind of symbol or this kind of you know, point of resonance for the content that it corresponds to, you know, in the instance that we're talking about, this like New Age religion content, but then it also functions as a representation of a certain relationship to painting and a certain kind of art historical kind of relationship to making painting and what that kind of resonance is. Oftentimes I will look for things, or I'm drawn to things that kind of have a point of intersection. So I think there's a certain reason why I've been, I mean, there are multiple reasons why I've been researching this New Age stuff lately, But one of the reasons is that for me, a lot of the kind of mythos that I believed about being an artist and being a painter was tied into some of my beliefs that I was taught growing up through this New Age stuff, right? Then correspondingly, as I've begun researching this, I see that there's a tremendous correlation between the origins of Western New Age religion and Romanticism, right? And so a lot of this is about kind of like teasing out those points of intersection, teasing out those histories and ontologies, and also then engaging them both, intellectually by reading about them, but then also physically by, you know, transcribing these things symbolically into a physical space where I can then have some kind of agency over them and interact with them through this other ritual of painting, scraping, sanding, destroying, et cetera, et cetera.
So let's talk a little bit more about that content, because that sounds still kind of mysterious, and it sounds like you're doing a lot of research, and if we can talk about this, I know this may have something to do with your show coming up in November, but what are you researching? What are you getting into that's informing some of the content that you're discussing?
So I've been specifically learning about this New Age church called the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, which was founded by a gentleman named Roger Hinkins in the late 60s and incorporated in 1971. He was raised a Mormon in this small, now ghost town, which formerly coal mining town called Rains, Utah, which is outside of Helper, Utah. And then, at some point had this near-death experience where he claimed to be visited and to begin inhabiting this higher consciousness. Now, this kind of like mythos is not unique, right? This is like a phenomenon that's super kind of prominent in other New Age religions and prominent of that kind of cultural moment, if that makes sense. But because I was personally introduced to his teachings through my parents and, personally affected by his teachings as far as like my ideological upbringing, I was kind of fascinated as an adult now to like learn more about him, to learn more about the context of his coming up with this shit, like where it fits into a larger history, how I could verify whether or not like he even was from where he's from, all this kind of stuff. So, over the last 2 years, I've started trying to both learn more about him personally, but then also learn more about the kind of larger moment that he was a part of and learn more about what that history is,
So, and what have you learned? Because I don't know anything about that, and that seems pretty fascinating. And this sounds like something that also shaped you as a person as you were growing up.
100%, yeah. Geez, where do I even start with what I've learned? I guess in the fall of 2018, so a little under a year ago, I took a trip out to Utah as kind of like one of the, starting points for this research. And so I drove down to Helper and then drove into Spring Canyon, which is the valley which hosted a number of these former coal mining towns outside of Helper, Utah, to go and both see the physical space where he was born and raised and to also see if I could find any types of traces to verify that he was actually from where he was from. Because I found it like really, I don't know if this humor resonates to everybody else, but I found it both like kind of hilarious and also kind of fascinating that a person who essentially made up a religion was from a place that didn't exist any longer. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Right, right.
So there's this kind of like, there's this aspect that also ties into these aspects of like, American self-reinvention, like these kind of larger, American capitalist myths that we all kind of are raised on through, various media that we consume. But so I was like, oh, this is kind of amazing. It's like both a humble origin story, which America loves, and also like, this idea of like self-reinvention and this kind of idea of like, individual specialness, all these types of things that kind of resonate in a larger kind of American, social mythos, but also, this guy, from my experience of him and like points where he intersected with me and the way that he ended up kind of building what became like a small empire, was just through his own kind of charismatic presence. you know, and I was kind of fascinated by the way, you know, this just this like kind of generic older white dude could hold sway over so many people just through his charisma. I thought that was kind of really interesting too in our current cultural moment. So I felt like I needed to kind of like dig in and see if there was, you know, if I could verify that his like at least background story checked out. And then, you know, I don't know that there will ever be a way for me to verify whether or not his supernatural claims are, you know, were real or if he believed them. You know what I mean? Like, those are the types of things that are entirely, in a sense, subjective, just as, you know, any type of religious belief, in a sense, is subjective because there's no way to verify any of that stuff, right?
Right.
So, yes, I met this 93-year-old woman at the local museum in Helper, Utah, that had babysat him, so that was kind of really helpful to situate him in a real kind of time space and, you know, recognize that he was from where he's from and, you know, just kind of like talking to people around the town. The organization still goes back to that area, you know, and like we'll do kind of visits to those sites and like has shot movies and such like that using the surrounding area. So it was kind of cool to be able to do that and kind of place that and situate that.
That's some pretty amazing research that you found the woman that babysat him. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was such kind of a nice bit of serendipity because, you know, I went to this small museum and it's called the Western Mining and Railroad Museum in Helper, Utah. And, you know, it focuses on the history of coal mining and railroads in Utah and in that surrounding area. It's in a part of Utah called Carbon County. Like, it's not, you know, like the name says it all, you know what I mean? And so I just went in there because it was like my first day in town. I figured I'd go check it out and see if I could find some photos of the town before it kind of had fallen into ruin, the town where he was from, which was ruined, or, you know, just see if I could find other kind of hints or clues that could help me as I then the next day I'd planned to go up and hike around the kind of ruins in the ghost town. And as I'm doing that, I'm walking around and I'm talking to the docent a little bit, and I tell her I'm an artist and I'm looking into stuff and I'm researching. And she's like, oh, you know, our director's a photographer. You should meet him, whatever, whatever. I was like, oh, that'd be really nice, you know. And so as I'm getting ready to leave and, like, maybe looking through some stuff, like photos and stuff at the gift shop or whatever, the director comes in, and this guy, Jason Hunsinger, and I'm talking, you know, and I get introduced to him, and I'm just like, he's like, oh, like, you know, tell him that I'm here, I'm researching whatever. Like, oh, what are you researching? I'm like, well, I'm looking into Range Utah. Some folks that are from Range Utah. He's like, oh, what are the names? I tell him last name. I say Hinkins. And he looks at me like kind of cockeyed and says, like, which Hinkins? You know, like very kind of seriously. And I tell him which Hinkins I'm looking to research. And he says, oh, step into my office. Let's have a conversation. And he kind of starts trying to suss me out. And, you know, I tell him that I'm trying to learn about this guy who founded this church, et cetera, et cetera. And kind of open up to him that I'm in this place of approaching it from a kind of place of ambiguity, if that makes sense, or ambivalence, right? Like, I'm not a true believer and also not someone who's, you know, has some kind of vendetta. I'm just someone who's curious about this phenomena that existed, that affected my life, that had both, you know, positive and negative effects on me as a adolescent and adult, and I'm just trying to kind of make more sense of it. And so he kind of opens up to me that he had some experiences with members of this church and how he found some of it to be very strange, and how they had been filming a movie right when he had moved to Helper and so on and so forth. And so we kind of made a connection over that. And then he was like, yeah, you know, this woman, Aldine, was from Rains. I bet you she knew them. You should come back tomorrow. She'll be here working. And yeah, so he introduced me to this, you know, woman who volunteers there every Friday who happened to babysit them when they were like, you know, toddlers.
That's amazing.
Pretty wild.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And have this is fascinating. And so how is some of that research, if you can say that, going into the future paintings, or how do you imagine that getting into that kind of content? Because I would think that research is also changing your perception of what you were taught as a child. How is that filtering into your paintings in terms of symbols or content?
In a whole host of ways. I mean, the main thing, again, is that, as I talked about earlier, it's, you know, it becomes the kind of foundation for the paintings, right? Like, on that same trip, I also visited the University of California at Santa Barbara has a special collections library, which includes this subsection called the American Religions Collection, which in turn has a number of archives, one of which is from the Cult Awareness Network, which was an organization based out of Chicago that accumulated information on new religions in America from, I think it was like 1970 to 1996, until they got forced into closure by Scientology, right? Through like Scientology lawsuits, which they're famed for just, you know, litigating the shit out of people, right? But that said, they collected a lot of material on and about multiple new religions in America. And fortunately for me, they had an archive of material on MSIA. So I made a sojourn there to go and kind of like dig through their archive. And while they're, you know, talking with the one of the librarians, she was able to also expand the kind of, you know, swath of content that I was able to find by, you know, pulling into they had other stuff that was under a different name, blah, blah, blah. But so tying this back to the paintings, while there I was able to go through and see all these kind of like advertisement flyers, like primary source documents that are like promotional flyers, like prospectuses, catalogs, like publications, so on and so forth. And all that stuff has a visual identity, you know what I mean? All that stuff has an aesthetic.
Right.
And all that stuff really resonates to me in a weird way, because a lot of it is like eerily familiar, because it's stuff that my mom had around the house, you know what I mean? It's stuff that my dad had around the house. And like, so going back and digging through that material and being able to like take snaps of like these different images, I can then go and fold them into the paintings that I'm working on now and use that as kind of a baseline to start this conversation. Of course, as I get more and more excited about the imagery that I'm doing, I start thinking about like, how can I maybe adjust my painting ritual to allow more of that information to come through? What are these other actions that I can take, et cetera, et cetera? So.
Because this information is really, it's not something that the viewer will pick up on immediately. It's kind of a personal iconography that grounds it for you. But well, I suppose for compositionally, sure, it's something for the viewer, because like you're saying, that those kind of materials, those kind of graphics or symbols are designed to kind of bring the viewer in to read or listen, right?
Yeah, and I mean, as I mentioned, so like some of the work, I was recently on a residency. I was recently on two residencies, one in Italy at this place called Palazzo Monti, which is in Brescia in northern Italy, and a second in upstate New York, in Chatham, New York, called the Macedonia Institute. And this is the first time I'd ever traveled to do an artist residency. Originally, it was something that didn't appeal to me. I was really resistant to it. I always kind of thought, like, especially considering the way I work, which is so long duration and involves so many different stages and steps and having so many different paintings and tools and materials around me to do that, it seemed like kind of antithetical to how I work. But in fact, going and doing it forced me to kind of make some adjustments in my process while there. And so while working on paintings in these two spaces, I removed some steps from my usual painting ritual. So instead of priming everything in bin primer and sanding it, I was just painting and scraping layers upon layers, right? And so in doing that, a certain kind of larger amount of imagery and information from these underpaintings is coming through, because it's just, you know, they end up looking almost like double or triple exposures, if that makes sense. And so in that regard, which is something that I'm just kind of navigating, some paintings will exist like that, and that will have a lot more information that corresponds to this research that will be readily and visually available to a viewer, for instance. In some ways that information is still going to be totally buried in some paintings, but I think in other paintings that information is going to start really coming through in a different sense as I adjust and kind of tweak the larger kind of ritual that I perform when making it.
Sounds really interesting. So I'm looking forward to the show, and that'll be, is there a date set for that yet? That'll be sometime in November, and a pop-up.
Yeah, I think
produced by Patreon.
I think the dates are just November 5th to 12th. So only going to be up for a week. That's what they've been doing for these types of, off-site, I guess you could say, projects. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to be showing definitely a couple paintings that kind of come from that process, that kind of altered process that I was just describing, a couple landscapes that are made from photographs that I took while in that valley in Utah. So there'll be one painting that is two vantage points of this like schoolhouse from Rains, Utah, which would have been where the founder of that church, you know, attended school as a young child. And then another one, which is a couple other sites, not from Rains, but other coal mining, ghost town ruin type things from that same Spring Valley kind of complex.
And I want to ask you, it sounds really interesting. I hope to get to see that. And I hope some of the listeners do too. I want to ask you one more question, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
Well, you know, based on everything that we've just been talking about, I recently finished reading this book called, I think it's just New Age Religion and Western Culture, which is by this historian of religions, I guess is probably the best way to put it, Wouter Hanegraaff. I'm probably butchering the pronunciation, but he's a Dutch academic and professor who wrote this, you know, 500-plus page text on analyzing different trends in New Age religions and commonalities, and then tracing them and linking them to a history of Western esotericism, which for me was like such a godsend of a text, because not only did it like bring up all these different common threads between other New Age religions and the church that I'm specifically interested in a way to kind of contextualize those themes and those kind of attributes, but it also then tied them into this longer kind of ontology where it connects them to things like theosophy, to American transcendentalism, to, you know, European Romanticism, and then to the kind of genesis of Western esotericism in the Renaissance with, you know, things like Paracelsus and Hermeticism and Neoplatonism. And so him kind of like, and he's such a clear writer and has such a beautiful way of structuring this thing. I think it was his doctorate, doctorate thesis or whatnot. So it's right. Like just such a clear, incredible text and such a great point of reference for me. I found it like so eye-opening, and it also inspired this. I think I mentioned I'm doing an entirely new body of work, a body of paintings that is just painting. It's also functioning as a performance of ritual and magic, but not involving this kind of other ritual that I've been performing for the last decade. Based on his discussion of this thing called New Age practice called affirmations. Have you ever heard of this? Do you know what these are? Affirmations are like short positive phrases that people either
sure, like almost like mantras. Exactly,
and they're used to like it's almost like a like positive thinking training. Like you write out
right.
a mantra or an affirmation of things that you want to have manifest in your life, or things that you feel are lacking, or things that you want to work on emotionally, et cetera, et cetera. And kind of repeat them, which is something that I had totally forgotten, but were a big part of what my mom would kind of teach me and practice with me as an adolescent. I was like, oh, this is an incredible thing to start researching and looking into and to bring into my painting practice. So I'm just starting this kind of series of paintings based on affirmations, which I'm really excited about. So that book was something I just finished, and then in relation to that, I'm reading another book called I'm gonna kind of tweak the title probably because I don't have it in front of me, but it's like The Roots of Homeopathy in Romanticism or something like that. So it's kind of situating homeopathy, which is very strongly associated with New Age religion and New Age culture, with its historic its history, right? Situating it when it was begun, which is in the late 18th, early 19th century, and contextualizing it within the kind of cultural moment, which was Romanticism and, you know, the end of the Enlightenment, and kind of looking at that kind of that moment of shift and, like, the kind of reaction to Enlightenment rationality and, you know, that little bit of tension there, which also has a huge kind of import within the development of New Age religion or the tradition or trajectory into New Age religion too. So kind of dealing with a similar time frame through slightly parallel theme.
Sounds really interesting. Thanks for that. Kedar, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. It was such a pleasure to chat with you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.